You're listening to Trending with Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timory holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Coming up today, we'll be talking about the issue of dating in that attitude of there's always someone else better out there. With me today is Thomas Schmier. He's a Catholic therapist, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and is the head of Healing and Peace Ministries. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Timory.
So today we'll be talking a lot about divorce, remarriage, and whether or not for Catholics there is such a thing as dating after divorce. We'll be coming up also on the issue of former Vice President Joe Biden and his announcement that he's making a run for the presidency. So that and much more is coming up, along with the topic of the aimlessness of life, especially from a therapeutic perspective and the work that you're doing as a therapist. I want to touch on this because so many people, especially young men, millennial men, are finding themselves in this situation.
Exactly. I see the same thing.
So I want to start by talking about, did you hear that former Vice President Joe Biden will be running for the presidency?
Yes. Very well-spoken man.
Very well-spoken man. One of the interesting things that stood out, and some of you may have heard this trending online, is that in his announcement, he ultimately ends up citing from the Declaration of Independence, and he talks about these rights that we have as Americans, but he cuts it off before it starts to get into the right, the very first right, and that is the right to life. And I find it no coincidence, would you, that he cuts this out?
Yeah, I've looked into this to see if that would be consistent with what he believes. And I found an article from 2008 in the Jesuit Review. And in the article, it explained that he started out pro-life, but then after Roe versus Wade, then he switched. Mm-hmm. So in other words, instead of acting according to the eternal law of God, he's chosen the U.S. Constitution to be what he listens to.
And essentially an amendment, right?
An amendment, the 14th Amendment.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, to the Constitution, reading into the Constitution, essentially, as many will say, because in what place do we have a right to kill another human being, ultimately, in the most innocent, right, earliest stages and forms?
Exactly. That's why I said the eternal law of God. Of course, our human laws can't allow us to kill another human being.
Absolutely. And I wanted to bring it up just for a second, because I know, as you know, we continue to gear up toward the 2020 election, where we're going to hear a lot of different things about various candidates. And just right off the bat, there needs to be a major red flashing light when we're looking at candidates and they are in favor of things such as the killing of innocent human life. I mean, he's to the point where he's been pro partial birth abortion, among many other things, you know, having worked directly with President Obama. And so it's very important that we're paying attention, being willing to have these conversations about candidates that will essentially affect the course of many people's lives based on the laws that are put into play.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but for me, it's common sense that if someone believes in killing, I don't trust that person in general.
Mm, yes, absolutely. Especially when a child's so innocent. You know, it's one thing to defend yourself, yeah. But it's another thing, you know, the child is not a virus to be fought after, as, you know, we're treating it as a medical disease, essentially. So coming up, we're going to be talking a little bit about dating and the how-tos and nots, essentially, of dating. But I want to talk for a second. There was an article recently on your website. And with me today is Thomas Schmier. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. And you specifically work a lot with Catholics. And you stand by what the Catholic Church teaches. So you work a lot with people who have also faced major difficulties in their marriage. Actually, I'm really looking forward to, in the next episode where you're joining me, we'll be talking about dissatisfaction within marriage. But today I want to specifically talk about the issue of annulments, divorce, remarriage, and dating. Let's start, before we get into the topic of what dating might look like if you are someone who's been divorced, let's talk about what specifically an annulment is for a second here.
Sure, exactly. So I know you at least were a biblical scholar. You have a degree in Bible studies. So you would know that the line in the Bible where it says, what God has joined together, man cannot put asunder, which means man cannot take apart.
Right.
Therefore, once married in the Catholic Church, always married in the Catholic Church. If it was a valid marriage, then it remains till death do us part. But an annulment is not Catholic divorce. It's not divorce. And I know you know this, but some of our listeners might not know this.
But that's what it's so commonly referred to. Annulment is just a Catholic version of divorce. But in reality, an annulment is essentially saying that based on the time of when the vows were being exchanged between the two spouses, there was something there that did not have full intention of being free, total, faithful, and fruitful. There was some current sinner attitude against one of those vows that was not, there was no intention of living up to it at that time.
Exactly. So, for example, maybe someone had a prenuptial agreement. Well, then that is a cause to have an annulment because they are already anticipating getting a divorce.
Absolutely. Or, for example, there's so many sins against the attitude of faithfulness within marriage. And I think often a lot of annulments come down to the attitude of faithfulness. So if a person's entering into the marriage and they're, let's say, already cheating. I had a dear friend, very, very Catholic, who ended up entering into a marriage and ended up finding out that her husband was cheating on her. She said, oh my gosh, I'm Catholic. You know, I'm married to this man. Well, it ends up coming out that he had been cheating her at the time of their marriage,
right,
which made their marriage null. Now, had he suddenly created a habit of cheating after the marriage and had full intention to live up to those vows, the marriage would not have been null.
Exactly, exactly. So a lot of people think that if my husband cheated on me or my wife cheats on me, that it's an invalid marriage. No, that's not right. What it is that there was something psychologically unsound, for example, at the time that the vows were made, where the person couldn't quite grasp exactly what you said,
right,
what marriage means.
Now, being a Catholic therapist, this is a topic you often deal with, and you wrote on your blog recently about a young woman who had written into you. She has previously been or is married in the Catholic Church, and both her and the person she's dating are both in the process of looking at the possibility of their marriage being declared null, that meaning that it was never a valid marriage. Those vows were not entered into fully on both parts of the spouses. But she's sharing, you know, here I am, I'm dating, and I'm dating someone else who's also Catholic, and ultimately you ended up calling them into their mission as married persons, that's not exactly what the church is offering as an option to dating necessarily.
Right, exactly. And the specific circumstance, and I just want to add this little detail in there just because I think people, it would be helpful for people, is that the woman did not have a valid Catholic marriage. And so she was not going to get an annulment. She doesn't need an annulment.
It was not necessary because she wasn't married in the Catholic Church.
She wasn't married in the Catholic Church while she was Catholic. So she's eligible to date any eligible bachelor.
So in other words, she did not have the sacrament of matrimony. And that's a really important distinction, that we're called to live a sacramental life. And some people engage in marriage outside of the church. And so that's where you have to check, well, I was not married within the church. So you might be free to marry, unless maybe you're married in a Christian denomination. That might get into a whole nother realm.
Exactly. And so, but the person she was dating did have a valid Catholic marriage. So,
to his knowledge at this point in time.
And what I found surprising was that they had dated for 3 to 4 years already, and now they're looking into annulment. So I just want to say to all of our listeners, look into an annulment as soon as you get your divorce if you want to start dating. Don't date first and then look into annulment. Receive the annulment first and then get an annulment.
Because the reality is you may not be free to date unless the church has declared that your marriage was null. Then you are currently married and dating, even if in the eyes of the law you have been divorced, it's a sin against chastity ultimately. And that's what you're calling this young couple into.
Right, exactly. And even though they weren't acting out sexually, so we wouldn't say it was adultery in that sense, I think it was an emotional affair. And that even though both of the people they had civil marriages with, that they got divorced from, even though both of their spouses, in quotes, cheated on them, abandoned them, that still, when it's a covenant that includes God, man, and woman, it's still intact because God does not abandon his people.
Mm. And it's a reminder Jesus talks about in the Gospel of Matthew that God brought two people together, male and female, and he instituted marriage between them. And that was meant to be a forever commitment, not a bond not to be broken. And this is what Jesus says. People say, well, Moses allowed for divorce. Well, and he challenged, well, was it Moses that allowed for divorce? And essentially is challenging, you know, it was because of the hardness of hearts. God didn't say, I now declare that divorce is okay. He said, what was it from the beginning that man and woman should walk together? And so ultimately, here's the question, and we're going to go deeper into this a little bit as well. As I find so many people, especially listeners who write into me the show, they're going through the process or hoping to go through ultimately finding that their marriage is made null, but it's not been yet. And they're currently dating. And so often I have to call out and say, I understand that you're dating right now, but in the eyes of the church, you are still married unless that marriage has been studied through the church and been made null. And so what's the path for someone who finds themselves in this experience?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it would be good to separate themselves. If they're dating, I think it'd be good to separate themselves. But then, of course, to talk to the pastor, that's the first step, and get the annulment process going.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the beautiful things you put together in this article is you talk about all how ultimately God does call us to make commitments. And at times that does mean that we're called to suffer with him, to find that idea of fidelity, which we made in our marital vows. And, you know, I'll come back sharing this brief story a little bit more. But I had a dear friend whose parents were married and there was sickness within the home. And the parents ended up having to separate at one point. And I'll tell you what happened when we come back just in a minute with Thomas Schmier, licensed marriage and family therapist. You're on Trending.
Timmery will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We are live here in studio. I have Thomas Schmier with me. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. That actually is a mouthful. I keep stumbling over that. So we're talking about annulments, divorce, remarriage, and specifically dating after marriage. But I was going to tell the story when we came up to the break when I was mentioning this. I had a dear friend whose parents had been married for a number of years. There was illness within the family, among one of the spouses. And so there was a physical separation that had to take place for the good of the spouses and the good of the children. However, it did not make the marriage no, they were still married within the eyes of the church. And it was very beautiful over the years to see how the mother stood faithful to her husband, although she could not allow him back into the home. Mm-hmm. And regular contact would be harmful at periods of time. She always remained faithful in the virtue of chastity within marriage, did not date outside of the marriage. And it's a reminder that sometimes we are called to live a more challenging path. But that's what we've been called to in the vocation of marriage. We don't know if that marriage will be till death do us part and we both die natural deaths. If one person will be sick, one person will struggle with an addiction or great sin.
Yeah, isn't that the beauty? Marriage is supposed to be about service. It's not just for me. It's mm-hmm. to serve the spouse. You joined your marriage because you wanted to have mutual subjection, referring to theology of the body, where you give him a sincere and total gift of self, and he gives you a sincere and total gift of self. And a lot of people think in theology of the body that that's just about about sexual intercourse.
Right.
But it's not. It's your entire life, giving it to the other person. If they're sick, I'm going to stand by you. I'm going to stay chaste. I'm going to stay pure. I'm not going to go get some emotional comfort from another woman while you're sick and I can't be with you. And I just think it's so beautiful to have that loyalty and that faithfulness. And I think God smiles down on you when you do that.
You're surrounded by a lot of suffering in the work that you do, but as being a Catholic therapist, Thomas, you often are calling people into not to just, you know, kind of sit in your suffering and just dwell there. You're calling people into good habits, practices, healing, that although there may continue to be suffering given your situation in life, we're going to bring the best possibility of healing and peace so that you can walk the journey that God's calling you to. Now, many people today are walking a difficult journey of finding themselves single longer than they'd like to. Is this mm-hmm. something you even see within your practice?
Yes, especially, I treat especially Catholics happen to come to me with my background in Catholic theology, et cetera. And I'm seeing Catholic young adults getting married later and later and later.
Yeah, so I'd like to go a little bit into some of your thoughts on the do's and don'ts of dating and kind of some of the harmful behaviors that we put ourselves into that can really prevent a relationship from either starting or even progressing. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, I was really a student of chastity when I met my wife. Mm-hmm. And I was studying, I was learning from Catholic evangelists like David Sloan, learning from Christopher West, people like this. And what I learned, not necessarily that they were saying it, but this is what I took on, was that people are shooting themselves in the foot with their focus on chemistry. Mm-hmm. And I think that had a lot to do with the media, what I call a Hollywood approach to dating. So basically, what do we like in a good romance Hollywood flick? We like it when love at first sight, they're crazy about one another, and it's this whirlwind, wild, romantic adventure. They probably have sex on the first date. And I say we.
It's intense. Yeah. It's full of emotions. Mm-hmm. And this is what we see in so many of the stories that play out on television and TV.
Exactly. And they're making out, and people seem to love these makeout scenes. And when I see these makeout scenes, I literally get nauseous, and I usually turn to my wife, you know, if I happen to see something like this, and say, they don't even know each other.
You sound like my sister. She's 16 years old, and she gets so, I'll use the word triggered. It's triggering for her when she's watching these different romance movies, et cetera. And she goes, they don't even know each other. Like, she wants to see people maybe at least be friends for a period of time first. But it's such a testament today that even young people are saying, okay, this is enough. I'm recognizing that there's not even a friendship there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people fill in the blanks, and they make the person out to be what they want them to be. Mm-hmm. And then they may even get married, and then later on they're disillusioned once they see who the person really is.
Talk to us a little bit about the don'ts of marriage and this feeling state of addiction, essentially.
Right. So some people might call it the BAM moment. And they think it's really important that we gaze in one another's eyes and have that moment and these kinds of things when early on in dating, when you barely even know the person. But that's the beginning of what's called a feeling state addiction for some people, and where your head gets clouded and you can't think straight anymore. And you're seeking that feeling from the BAM moment or the chemistry. And it's all about getting connection and belonging. And why would someone be susceptible to this? It's because they didn't get connection in their childhood, quite often to their parents.
That's Thomas Schmier. You are listening to Trending with Tim Ray. Thomas is a licensed marriage and family therapist. So we're talking about some of the don'ts of marriage, you know, being too concerned over chemistry. And, you know, we have to say it over and over again. I'll never forget. It was a popular book. The author of it is cheap. The name of the book is Cheap Sex. I think it's Mark Rignaris, maybe. I'm not remembering the author's name, but it's Cheap Sex. And he talks about how basically, you know, people are falling right into bed with each other and how basically we're like, you know, a bunch of raw meat rubbing up against each other anymore. And it's such like a morbid vision. Mm-hmm. But here's the reality. We don't even know each other. I mean, first dates, first conversations. I mean, it's also the attitude of what's been built up and the Cosmo Girl type of attitude. You travel to Paris, or wherever it might be, you meet a person in a coffee shop, you exchange, you know, those romantic glances, you're suddenly wooed, and next thing you know, you wake up, and I'm thinking of that Carrie Underwood song where she wakes up and she says, I don't even know my last name. She got married the night before. But let's talk about some of the do's of dating and how important it is to actually be willing to step out, make commitments, and later on in the show, we'll be talking about some of the remedies to this difficulty that so many people are having, whether they're, you know, divorced and trying to enter back into dating. And we talked about some of the issues with that a little earlier. But let's talk about some of the do's of dating.
There's something I call the prudent progression, and that's in contrast to the Hollywood way of approaching dating. And with the prudent progression, we're trying to be wise, follow the wisdom of the Bible, follow guidelines from the church. We know we're supposed to be chaste. And what you want to do with the prudent progression is be concerned with the other person. So if you're a man, you especially, you know, men want to be protective. I've heard you say that on your show before, that it's a masculine quality to be protective. And it's a protective kind of love. And that's in theology of the body also. And so we really need to approach things where we're guarding the woman's heart, where we don't want her to fall in love with us too quickly, because we want her not to lose her ability to be wise and to see us for who we really are. We'd rather have her reject us than be unhappy with us.
So how do you do that? You know, I think one obvious is dating chastely. That should be an obvious go-to. And, you know, we could get into parameters, but setting basic guidelines of when you're spending time together alone, having, you know, a time limit of how late you stay up. I remember people in college would share with me, oh, we're struggling with living chastity. I remember my now husband used to tell them all the time, well, what time are you hanging out till? Mm-hmm. Maybe you shouldn't be hanging out so late. Exactly. And he'd say that to friend after friend who would come and say, I'm struggling with chastity. Like, well, don't hang out past 7-8 o'clock at night sometimes, unless you're with people.
Yeah, but if I do that, then I might be chaste.
But. The goal is to get away from the buts.
Exactly.
So some of the more of the do's, I think, that we can enter into is you often talk about this feeling state addiction in a positive sense as well.
Right.
So talk about that a little.
Yeah, it's not really that the feeling state is positive, right? The addiction mm-hmm. is never going to be a positive because right. the word addiction, but there's a positive way of going about things. And so I think we do need to talk about the parameters. Right. I think we have to talk about, I think what people are doing, they're consummating their relationship before they're married. And I'm not talking about sexually. They're consuming one another
emotionally
with right. their time. They're married before they're married, and there's nothing left.
Right.
So they're texting back and forth all day long. They're seeing each other every day. Could be talking on the phone, video chatting. I don't know what, but I think it would be wise to keep your prayer life going, which actually should take a significant amount of your time. To keep your charitable works going, mm-hmm. which should take a considerable amount of time. To have some separate leisure from the person you're dating, and to go a lot more slower with everything, including the affection. I mean, there's a time and a place for the affection. There needs to be a lot of affection, but to go slowly into that.
Yeah, so essentially what you're saying is from the perspective of being a licensed marriage and family therapist and looking at the issue of addiction, you're saying slow down even in the dating process. Enjoy getting to know someone, but limit that time. You know, you don't dive in too much too soon. You might find it, you know, that there are certain habits. And I think this is a good example. You might spend too much time with someone early on. You haven't really developed a love for them and a respect for them that you ought to. And you might find that there's not a sinful habit, but a habit you just don't like that maybe rubs you wrong mm-hmm. and are too quick to say, absolutely not. No, thank you. And shut the door. I actually see this very common mm-hmm. among friends who are dating. I said, well, what's wrong? And it's a very simple, small habit. I said, I could never do that. And it makes me laugh. But I think it's because too much familiarity too soon. You say, well, I can't do this habit. Well, maybe it's because there's not enough love there to tolerate yeah. certain behaviors. Yet.
Right. Yeah. I can't stand the way she laughs. I think I could never be married to her and listen to that laugh the rest of my life.
Oh, gosh. And even in terms of looks, though, as well, you know, mm-hmm. I hear people who are never willing to go on a date. Well, she's not exactly attractive as you'd like. And I see this within the Catholic world or vice versa. He's not exactly what I was looking for. And there's that shallowness that comes out. And I see this, you know, especially among people who have maybe waited. They're in their mid-30s and now they're really wanting to settle down and get married. And they're realizing that some of these standards that they had, not sinful standards that they're lowering, but standards that they could kind of light up their tension on.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Thomas Schmier is in studio here with me today. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. And when I heard you were coming on, I thought it was a perfect opportunity to talk about the issue of dating. Earlier, we talked a little bit about annulments and people who find themselves dating after, say, a divorce, but their marriage has not been declared null. And we're calling these people to a state of chastity, especially in your work, sometimes to a path of that includes suffering, but offering intercession for that spouse that they're still married to, although may be separated from. You can listen to this episode if you missed that part at radiotrending.com. Thomas, I want to go deeper into this topic of dating. We just went through the do's and don'ts of dating. And coming up, we're going to be talking about the antidote for so many people. And that is the aimlessness that so many people face in life. I think this is why Jordan Peterson is so popular today. Mm-hmm. He's telling especially men, grow up. Or for example, Jocko Willink, who's telling people, you know, discipline equals freedom. Commit yourself to things. They're such mm-hmm. powerful voices in our culture. But here's a really big key thing that I'm seeing happening, Thomas. And that is this attitude. I've heard it said over and over again. Well, I don't know if I'm ready to marry this person I've been dating for multiple years. I don't know if I'm ready to ask that person out because there might be someone else better out there. Do you see this a lot?
Yes. And just to go briefly into the aimlessness, if you're dating for several years and you're not sure, might be time to make a decision one way or the other.
Right.
Yes. It might be time to move on. But I also, you know, I think we do need to have appropriate standards. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to say to everyone blanket, marry the person, just go ahead and make the leap, because we really need to have those standards. And here are some standards that I think are godly standards, or ones that I think God would approve of. One is, from a male perspective, you would want a woman who is nurturing, but who has a backbone. And so, for example, and not that I'm like, not that you need to follow exactly what I did, but I found my wife online, a Catholic Singles website. And her profile said, if you don't believe in all the teachings of the church, please don't contact me. And I contacted her. I was so happy to find that out. And so that kind of thing. Someone who believes in all the teachings of the church.
Backbone,
she has a backbone. But she was also nurturing and caring and warm. She had the qualities that a good mother would have. Mm-hmm. And the qualities that make a good mother makes also a good wife. And then from the male perspective, from the female perspective, maybe you can tell me what would be some good godly standards from the female perspective.
You know, I think a really important thing is a man who pursues what is true, really pursues truth. Mm. And I think that that's important in a realm where we see so many different addictive behaviors, especially things such as pornography, among others, or even, you know, especially from the perspective of raising children, someone who's going to look for truth in terms of how they live their lives, in terms of their relationship with God, even if they're not at the point of faith that you want them to be that, to make sure that you know that they are pursuing truth in their lives, that they're going to pursue the true and right way to raise a family, the true and right way to interact with their spouse. I think that that's always been a really important thing to me. But also, you know, having a level of commitment, having a level of financial responsibility, some things that are very practical that enter into so many important realms of masculinity right now in our culture.
Thank you for that. That's reminding me of some practical feminine qualities that might offend some feminists out there that I think would be important to look for. And it's someone who actually would prefer to stay home with the children if possible,
right.
And would like to make that happen, and who actually knows how to cook a meal, you know, and can organize that kind of the meal plan for the week, and you can depend on them to go shopping and all that stuff.
Right. And there are some women who struggle with some of these basic, and I'm going to be blunt, and I mean no offense, but some of these basic skills, because I know women, you know, who, you know, are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and they don't really do the cooking in their home. Maybe it's because it was the environment they grew up in. They were never taught how to cook.
Right.
Or maybe there were some negative experiences early on in the marriage where what they were making was being criticized. You know, I have a family member who just won't cook at all now because she's been criticized by a husband. And I learned that recently, and I went, you're an amazing cook. I remember when you were cooking when we were kids, you know.
Yeah.
There are different dynamics that happen. I understand that. But I will tell this little story. Before my husband and I ever started dating, we were carpooling to school one day, and I remember we're talking about, well, what do we want to do in life? And I was already working in pro-life ministry at the time, and I said, well, I want to continue to do my ministry work, but I want to be a stay-at-home mom. I want to care for my family, and I know that that comes first in my vocation as a woman. And I remember him going, wow. And you just sat there in silence for a couple minutes. I remember exactly where we were, the stoplight and everything. And he said, that's really incredible. And I remember him saying, I had never heard that before. And I say this to a lot of women who contact me saying, I want to get married. I want to have a family. I really mean it when I say this. Tell people that, because there are so many men who are checking out of dating today because they think women are totally focused on their career. And instead of standing shoulder to shoulder, that the woman's going to be standing back to back with the man, looking out in a different direction, rather than mutually caring for each other and approaching the world together.
Exactly. I was just telling you recently that You know, I get a lot of credit for the things I do. I'm the public face of my practice. And I think that at least 50% should go to my wife, maybe 70, 80%. And she's my backbone. It's not just the stuff we're talking about. She'll edit a blog post before I put it out. She'll edit my ideas before I come on the show with you. Mm-hmm. She's there for me as a good sounding board that I can believe in.
I have a colleague right now I'm working with, a couple colleagues who are unmarried, working a lot within ministry, and will bounce things off of me. Mm-hmm. And I find, especially both as women and men, because mm-hmm. I always run things by my husband as well, but especially men sometimes can come off a little harsh at times, mm-hmm. maybe in some of their approaches to things, or even in talking about the topic of femininity and masculinity, and where men maybe need to be rounded out a little bit more so in a gentle approach. Mm-hmm. But how, when there's always that feminine or masculine element sometimes missing when we talk about issues of marriage and family life, if we talk about them just from one perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was so glad. That's why I turned it over to you, because I don't know what a woman should be looking for as much as you do.
Right.
And you've just gone through the process.
Yes, I'm married. You know, so many people kick back, oh, there's nothing to do anymore. No, the work begins now.
Exactly.
You know, it was shocking to me how many people, when they heard I was getting married, oh, good luck. Oh, are you sure you want to do that? And it was, you know, the small number of people, often people of faith, who said, you're so blessed to mm-hmm. Enter into this vocation that does require work and suffering at times, but is joyful if we allow it to be.
Exactly, which brings us right into the aimlessness versus being intentional. Mm. Because I think, you know, I thought all I had to do was be a chaste man and find a chaste woman. And when we get married, it's done. Like it's going to be in heaven. And it was like, oh.
You're like, I'm done. I've hit the mark.
We hit it. We made it.
I don't have to try anymore.
That's right.
You know, the piles of clothes in the middle of the kitchen. That's okay. She'll take care of it.
Oh, for sure.
The true moments.
Oh, you mean that's the way I used to be? No. But we do need to work. And it's so hard. As soon as you get married, you go, oh, I'm so immature. You find out how immature you are. You find out your flaws. And we need to be working hard before we get married.
Yeah.
And we have to have those good habits.
Absolutely. And that's where, you know, setting standards is really important. We started the segment by talking about there's someone else better out there. And this is an attitude that many people have. Standards are important, but we sometimes kind of create a set of standards that are unrealistic or mm-hmm. maybe have the wrong sort of ideals as well.
Yeah, and I liked what you said earlier about looks. And so with my men who are not getting married, you know, getting into their 40s and just somehow not getting married, I'll ask them, you know, who they're asking out or who they're interested in. And I'll ask them, and I know this is a reductive question, but I do it on purpose. I say, from a 0 to a 10, how good looking is she? And the ones they're shooting for are like 7s and higher. And they're still single. And I might ask them, I wouldn't exactly say it this way, but for example, and how do you think you look? You know, and do you exercise every day? Are you watching what you eat? And are you, you know?
Thank you. We need someone to be asking these questions on behalf of all single women. I say thank you, because I think this is some of the problem. I remember, I have to say, there's a period of time, about 2 years, in college, where I was single, and I'll tell you, not very many people asked me out at all. I think there were a lot of, like, me naively not knowing that their version of hanging out, I thought we were just, you know, being friends and hanging out, and I didn't know. But I can think of maybe one or two people that made it very clear that it was going to be a date during that period of time. And it's interesting, because so many people, like, are not willing to just start with asking you out. Mm. And I think that that's a problem as well.
Yeah, I think it's part of being a man. Is to ask. And I really encourage them. Here's the thing. I don't know what the word wingman exactly means, or if that's a word I shouldn't be using. But I tell my men, you need a wingman.
And a wingman.
A wingman. Yes. Yeah. You need someone to support you, who's going to be with you, who's going to think it's funny when she rejects you, and you're going to laugh about it too. But then you move on and ask the next one.
Yes.
You know.
And sometimes I have to say, maybe that's not the person you see yourself marrying. But if you are facing, you know, a single life a long period of time, be willing to go out on dates and get to know people. You're not committing to a relationship. You're not saying, I marry you. And if she thinks that, or he thinks that, that's their problem, and that's a big indicator that this is going nowhere. quite quickly.
Well, I hope so. Run for your life.
And this is a problem in the Catholic dating world, is that so many people do think the first date is like a pre-marriage proposal or that promise ring today.
The first date? Yeah, that's scary. Yeah, they're scared, shaking in their boots about the first date. Yeah,
it's a reminder for all of us, maybe relax a little bit on some of those standards that you've been placing on yourself, on other people when it comes to dating. And, you know, use your single time really as an opportunity to create good habits with food, with exercise. Use the opportunity to study. Use your opportunity to volunteer your time. I remember there's something that Lila Rose, very involved in pro-life work, had posted that I so resonated with, because she and I both got married this year after, you know, longer period of time single. And she posted how grateful she was to use all of this time to serve the church and serve the community.
Yeah.
That will form you for your future marriage.
Timory will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So good to be with all of you. I have licensed marriage and family therapist Thomas Schmier in studio with me. And we're talking about so much of the crisis today with dating, the aimlessness, both in people who have found themselves divorced, looking to remarry. So people who are living the single life longer than they have. If you've not been with us yet, you can head over to radiotrending.com to catch this episode. And also, for those who don't know, we are also available on Spotify. Just look up Trending with Timory. I want to talk about further this issue of dating and kind of just the difficulty some people, you know, this attitude of, well, there's someone else better out there. Let's talk about it clinically from the perspective of attention.
Right. And this is going to be basically I could talk about this 100 different ways and they're all different.
Right.
And they're all right. So this is a little slice of it is the aimlessness. So the idea is we need to have a focused way of going about things. So for example, when I was dating, I treated dating as a task and I scheduled it and I made sure it was happening. Everyone, that might be too far for a lot of people, but I was in my 30s and not married yet. I was like, I didn't get married till I was 36, I think. And so I needed to make this happen. And so once a week I would go and force myself to look through the online singles ads for Catholics. And it took some time, and I didn't want to do it. I willed myself to do it. And that's how I eventually found my wife's profile.
Mm-hmm. So you were intentional about taking the time.
That's right.
And sometimes we have to think outside of the box a little bit. You know, there are people who say, well, I don't know anyone in this area. And I know some people who are, and I respect it, will absolutely say, I cannot online date.
Right.
I just can't put myself there. And maybe that's you. I understand. I know a lot of good, wonderful people who have met and gotten married and have wonderful marriages like yourself, yeah. Thomas. But maybe there are other places you can put yourself to meet single people as well.
I agree. And so the center of our life, of course, needs to be God. And our vocation is to holiness. The primary vocation is to love. So how are we going to love? Hopefully towards marriage, but maybe we need to discern a religious vocation too.
Absolutely.
So all roads to our final vocation are very similar.
And this is totally a different path than we had planned to discuss, but just a brief comment. So many people who are facing single life often say, well, I know I'm not supposed to be a religious sister or a priest. And I'll sometimes ask, well, have you ever visited maybe three different religious orders?
Mm-hmm.
Spent a weekend with them, talked with a priest, maybe you're not called to be a priest, maybe you're called to be a brother. You know, have you ever? No, I've never done that. Well, just like, you know, we can't say that we know our vocation is to marriage unless you're discerning marriage with a particular person. I think the same can be said of the vocation to religious life. You can't know whether or not you're meant to be a priest. Okay, so the diocesan priesthood didn't work for you. Maybe another order was something that works
mm-hmm.
for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I want to talk as well about the impact that addiction has and our inability to commit and date properly. Speak to this from your perspective.
What was the part about the commitment?
The difficulty to commit based on so many addictions that we have.
Right. So addictions, aimlessness, all of this, kind of going in the wrong direction instead of focusing in on what we need to be doing, focused on heading towards marriage, which starts with going on dates. And it's not just about dating. In general, it's, do you have chronic analyzing or assessing or daydreaming or aimlessness? All these behaviors are the opposite of actually doing something, accomplishing. There's a time and a place for some analyzing, some daydreaming. It's part of everything. But when some people are chronically doing this, or they're chronically on their phones, or some people are addicted to porn. Mm-hmm. And so these are all distractions. We're not even getting into morals. It's just a distraction. It's not intentional. There's not too many people I know, solid Catholics, who are addicted to porn, who are saying, yeah, I put it in my planner that Wednesday at 9 a.m. I'm going to, go ahead and check out some porn.
Yeah.
They're not scheduling looking at porn. But this is something that happens.
Well, is it also because maybe they're not scheduling the rest of their life? There's this aimlessness. Is that what you're getting
That's
at?
That's what I'm getting
problem.
At. You got it. That's exactly what I'm saying. Is these are the stories I hear, is that men are going to bed and then getting out of bed and looking at porn. Mm-hmm. So it's that impulsivity, impulsive behavior. They really need to schedule what they're doing and ask themselves, am I doing what's on the schedule? And why is that important that I do that?
Mm-hmm. And this is just overall an important thing to do within the realm of intentional living. It's so easy to have so many, to be pulled in so many different directions today. Mm-hmm. Okay, my phone's buzzing. Someone was asking me all these questions the other day. It wasn't someone I was close to, and they wanted an answer. I had 25 unread text messages, and they're like, oh, you haven't responded to me about this. It wasn't that important. I viewed it, and I said, I looked at the person. I said, I'm sorry. I have 25 unread text messages. And I said, I'm not trying to make any excuse, but I just have had to prioritize that. And, I had to pause for a second. And I know for some people that might have sounded harsh, but all of our life, with the ability for so many distractions, the ability to be pulled in so many directions, family commitments, friends, work, etc. There are times where we have to pull back and say, am I where I'm supposed to be at this second? Or am I maybe working too much right now? Or am I neglecting my work responsibilities? Am I neglecting my ability to provide for my family?
Exactly. So if I plan to be doing activity X at a certain time in the day, but I have a whole bunch of emails, what does that mean? Do I find myself just looking through the emails? And I think we all do sometimes,
right?
And trying to answer them all, and then all of a sudden I forgot what I was supposed to do. but that's not intentional. That's the email system telling you what you're going to do with your life.
Right. I remember a course in college, it was career planning, and we had all of these incredible business savvy people in all different forms of industry, from someone who's, a CEO of a major tech organization who also has a family, or, is running their own small business and is single, all these different perspectives. But some of the things that really stood out to me, one of them talked about, schedule time to check your email and keep your email time within that period of time. Mm-hmm. Another really, really great thing that I really take into heart is only touch something once. So an example might be, okay, I opened this email on my phone because I'm sitting in the grocery store line. Well, don't leave it, only touch it once. Mm-hmm. Answer it and go through, and it'll force you to no longer check your email in those brief moments at the checkout. Otherwise, you're touching the same thing over and over again. Or when you change your clothes for the day, put them away, put them in the hamper rather than tossing them on the floor and now scrambling them around again.
Right. That last part's about completion, finishing what you started. And that's something I've struggled with in my life. And I've noticed I was starting projects and not finishing them. So I would get out the tools and feel all manly. And I don't know what, whether it's repair some plaster or use some screwdrivers, some hammers, this kind of thing. And then I'd get done, and then I'd be like, okay, that's done, and then walk away. And then for the next several months, lying there right next to where I did the project are the tools. and so I've had to learn, your job is not done until it's done. You need to clean up too.
To put things away. Yeah. The strengths that we have. Let's talk for a second. Help with the porn issue. Could you say that also the aimlessness and just like, oh man, I'm here and I'm just checking my email and I should have been doing something else and now I'm bored or I'm stuck and I'm allowing the email to dictate my life. People then sometimes just tend to check out to feel better about themselves because they're not completing tasks. And so then they're turning to pornography and phone addiction and so forth.
That's part of it. And I'm also seeing something a little more complicated than that where they are anxious. They're socially anxious. So they're not getting involved in young adult groups or this or that because they're too anxious to go do it. And they are despairing. So they think, you know, I really want to be married, but it'll never work out. No woman will say yes. And, but the strange thing is that, you know, there's so many different types of porn out there. And out of all the different little subgenres that are perverted, the ones that my guys, my clients are going to, it's usually romantic love between a husband and a wife. Mm. That's what they want to be married. Mm. That's exactly what they're drawn to. And porn is a quick, they get the feeling of marriage very quickly, very impulsively, without doing the effort of going out there and meeting a woman and dating her.
So you're seeing a desire on the heart to be married mm-hmm. is so present, even mm-hmm. in that porn addiction.
That's right.
So some of the key takeaways I'm getting from this is you're saying to overcome this, you know, attention issue, the inability to commit. Maybe you're struggling with, you know, having just recently, you know, going through the process of maybe receiving an annulment. Be intentional about scheduling your time is what you're saying. Be really intentional. Control your attention. Focus on one thing at a time and right. complete those tasks. Even just the dopamine and other chemicals in our brain, yeah. knowing that we complete something so important.
It feels good. And then also to have your priority in order. And I don't say priorities, I say priority. Have your vocation in order, which is love and holiness. Mm. So why not daily mass? Regular. So you wake up in the morning, I don't feel like going to mass today. Well, did you make a commitment to go to mass? Right. If you did, go. You know, keep those commitments. Keep yeah. that discipline, that intentional living is going to go a long way with you.
And something I saw in your notes, when you talk about vocation, you said obedience. You may not be married. If you are married, obedience to your spouse. Right. But ultimately, obedience to the church and the full teachings, mm-hmm. the moral teachings and truth the church presents to us.
Exactly. And I think we all need someone to be obedient to. And that's what people are squirming from when they are not getting married. And they're squirming to be obedient to someone.
That's Thomas Schmier. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist. His organization is Healing in Peace. You can find him at healingandpeace.com. He's available via Skype and phone as well if you're not in the sunny San Diego area. But he really is an incredible leading, what I say, Catholic therapist and is an incredible resource. And so many people are afraid of therapy. I think of it as a stigma. But the reality is so many people have wounds from families, past experiences, current addictions, that it is a great gift for your life to go through that healing. I want to let you all know not to miss an episode of Trending. If you like what you hear and would like to give us some feedback or subscribe, head over to radiotrending.com.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To learn more about Timmery Millington, visit timmery.com.